Aha. Welcome, team. Welcome, team. We're beginning uncharacteristically on time because we have a beautiful piece of music to play. It's long but wafty and will get us into the 29 Pisces degree, all important. So it's also one of those things. It's like periodic bouts of bleakness lately. And then I sometimes online, whatever, but I found Omar Sosa. Oh, actually, it was a radio show, Omar Sosa, and I go, oh, I didn't know about him, Cuban musician, Santeria musician, and it's like, oh, it's an important part of my life. How wonderful! And the music was so fantastic. So, we begin with Transparent Water, which he says is to heed nature's warnings and protect our most important resource. Pianist Omar Sosa travels the world looking to make musical connections. His Afro-Cuban heritage blends magically with the other members of this trio. Sekou Keita comes from a long line of West African griots, and he's a master of the kora. Gustavo Ovalles is a talented percussionist from Venezuela who's worked with Omar Sosa in many different settings. The differences in culture and language are no barrier to these musicians. All three faces beam with joy when they perform together, and it's contagious. So here is Transparent Water. Here we go, team. Thank you. love them? Don't you just love them? The radiance and the smiles. It's oh, it's so moving. And perfect Neptune dreams, vision, water, music. Oh, we're gonna dive into that. Just what's needed. And I found him on a radio show. I'll try and find that. When I was feeling like whoa, and then it's like oh, you know, when you find somebody and you go kinship. And it's like I didn't know his work before, but it's like it brought up a whole important Santeria chapter of my life, you know, an initiation and the power of Legba. And his story is so fabulous. He came to this country from Cuba when he was 30, I think, Bay Area. And some important, I've forgotten the name, but well, you know, important American composer was like, oh, he's really a great composer, and invited him to open Carnegie Hall with him. So the first part of Carnegie Hall was this important American composer, you know, conventional but brilliant. And nobody knew about Omar Sosa or magic or anything. And apparently he came on and he did, you know, in full on Santeria, Santero garb and invoked, and everyone got goosebumps and didn't know. And then apparently by the end he was standing on the piano invoking Legba, and the Carnegie Hall audience has never seen anything like this, but they went wild. And anyway, so I loved finding Omar Sosa. We have another beautiful thing later for him. So, team, so much on our work table. It's the dark of the moon, right? There'll be a new moon on Thursday, but dark of the moon is when people gather to write the desirable headlines. Oh, there we go. So, we have the peace plan and everything. But I can't resist bringing up Claudia Sheinbaum immediately. Let me do this here. So, all right. So, I'm going to share screen. All right, and then I'm gonna, this is our chart, and then I'm gonna put Claudia Sheinbaum in the center in a moment. But just briefly, so we have the Sun and Venus conjoined. All right, so Venus is at the heart of the underworld, right? The completely invisible, deep down, but at this broadcasting telepathic degree. And here's the dark of the moon and Taurus coming up behind us. Neptune, as always for us, like straight down from Washington, D.C., is 29 Pisces, and there's Neptune reminding us that the place of initial influence for the trickster part of all of us is the dream world. You know, that the dreams incarnate into actuality and go, oh. So let me just put Claudia Sheinbaum in here. So it's an I did a noon birthday, a noon birth time, but it's good enough. Look, her moon is 29 Pisces. Ooh. And it just reminds us that the beauty of this language, you know, inside is her chart or anybody's chart we want to put, and outside is where all the planets are now, reminding us, you know, of our, you know, individuality separated by a thin membrane we call identity from the whole huge big conversation. So Neptune is the collective dream world. Ooh. And here she is, Sun in Cancer, incarnational agent of Big Mama. Where's the moon? We go, ooh, look at it right there. It's just so it's very thrilling and it's very wonderful. And then just to bring up a little bit of her, because this is big and we want to protect her. What is it? 36 people running for office at the, in the Mexican election were assassinated. One right before the polls opened, right? And it's like, it's rough and tumble, but here comes Big Mama. And her Mercury is a fun degree. Her Mercury is world famous musician begins to play to a huge audience. Comprehensive overview of the human drama and one's own place in it. Here comes Graber, right? Attainment of high levels of proficiency in intellectual, artistic self-expression, extraordinary will to live, catalyzing in others the extraordinary will to live, to create, to participate. Cool. All right. We'll and look at all this action right now, right on her Mercury, just for fun. And we go, okay. We love that her Uranus quintiles Neptune. Again, power of imagery, opening the portals for change to come on in. We go, oh, great. The moon quintiles. Oh, never mind. I can't read my notes. So there's that. And if anybody wants to chat or comment, there we go. But much to love here. And it's always quirky to have, here's Pluto out here in the world, making a 150 degree angle to her sun. It's such an interesting conversation. Elizabeth Warren has this conversation of Aquarius to Cancer to take Cancerian values into the collective, right, in some way. And we go, okay, tending. And she's, a grand trine in water. She possesses in her magic backpack power of symbols, power of dreams. And we go, okay. So there's that for now. If anybody wants to salute her or make a comment or whatever. And so we've been thinking backstage of who to invite in at the dark of the moon. And Sean, you wanted to invite in Rosa Luxemburg and Calamus. Well, and we wanted to bring in Law and Order too, just for fun. But do you want to bring in Rosa Luxemburg?
Absolutely. And so, I'm Rosa Luxemburg, this wonderful, brave, fierce spirit who stood up against all manner of totalitarians and really dedicated her life to liberation and justice for people. And also a great lover of beauty. She found her peace and her joy in going up into the mountains and gathering plants and pressing them into a notebook to become herbarium specimens. And I feel like one of the more unfortunate slogans that I've come across in my time, and there are so many unfortunate slogans, but one of the ones that really set me astray for a time is the whole, if you're not outraged, you aren't paying attention. And it's not that it's not entirely that it's not that it's entirely untrue, because certainly there is much to be outraged with if you are paying attention. But if you pay attention more widely, there's so much more else to see and so much more else to be with. And so I came across this passage from her when she said, "Don't forget, as busy as you may be, to quickly raise your head and cast a glance at those great silver clouds and that silent blue ocean in which they are swimming. Take notice of the resplendence and glory that overlie this day, because this day will never ever come again. This day is a gift to you, like roses in full bloom, lying at your feet, waiting for you to pick it up and press it to your lips." And more, I feel like if we aren't present to that beauty, then we aren't present to the reason for everything we're trying to do. We aren't present to everything that we are trying to bless. And also, if we aren't present to that beauty, we find ourselves stuck and rigid. And I think also about one of her other probably most famous passages where she says, "Those who do not move do not feel their chains." And so we have to,
Do not feel their.
those who do not move do not notice their chains.
Oh,
And so we're called to movement by beauty, and we can call in her distant revolutionary spiritual cousin of a very different orientation in the fractional splintering of the left, Emma Goldman. And I feel like along with "those who don't move don't feel their chains" comes "if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution." And so the need for us to welcome in these lovers of beauty, these lovers of joy, these lovers of pleasure, who were also ferocious in their defense, of beauty and freedom. And of course, with Emma Goldman, two things that come to mind are, first of all, that she called her magazine Mother Earth. And so there was that little hint of, more than a little hint of animism to Emma Goldman, although you have not quite as out front as it might be sometimes. But I also love that she had a career selling ice cream in Worcester, Massachusetts
Oh,
before. Yeah, she and Alexander Berkman had an ice cream stand, and then Berkman went and shot the industrialist, and that was the end of the ice cream stand. But I love thinking
let's
about the
bring it back.
possibility.
Let's bring it back, the Emma Goldman, Alexander Berkman ice cream truck going through neighborhoods, recruiting little
Absolutely.
children, recruiting little children.
Yeah. And it was not very far from the neighborhood where Abbie Hoffman later grew up. And so there's something in that that seemingly bleak city of Worcester, Massachusetts, that brings forward this wonderful exuberance and the playfulness that's necessary for us to really, really engage in transformation.
Because Worcester wait, say your homage to Worcester, Massachusetts again.
Well, Worcester, Massachusetts is where Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman had their ice cream stand.
Right.
And it was also where Abbie Hoffman grew up.
Okay. And it's also where my dad was born.
Ah.
So yeah. And I remember in this in the in the in the 1970 driving through with my hippie brother, and I was pretty hippie too, and picking up hitchhikers going, a lot of freaks in Worcester. It's like, okay. Right, so and Fritchburg too. But I'm so glad to hear you bring up Rosa Luxemburg in a way I never knew. And because I was sort of Emma Goldman team, right? And she was very not Rosa, and I had a interesting Providence, Rhode Island, working class, smart Marxist boyfriend who thought I was Rosa Luxemburg. I'm like, no, she wasn't an anarchist. But I didn't know the beauty that you brought up. And my friend, late great art critic in San Francisco, Kenneth Baker, said, beauty is always available to the contemplative mind. And we go, right. But in speaking about words, and if you're not outraged, we could frame it as, aren't we all outraged, as a community kind of invitation as possible. But what I was mentioning backstage is, okay, language, may our words and our metaphors and our stories be in accord with our dedicated hearts, and getting so much protest. Email and invitations. And remember, protest, it comes from testes, right? Protest means to grab your balls and affirm. I'm always up for changing this word. I like Standing Rock saying we're protectors, right? Protesters.
Yeah.
But all the protests are like, we're going to go to the Supreme Court and demand this and that. And I go, demand is still kind of a slight tantrum yoga, unworked out issues with daddy kind of a word, as opposed to calling it in. What are we creating? Peace. When are we creating it now? What are we creating? Justice. When and just in the spirit of Omar Sosa and music and Legba and words of, calling it in. And then wait, did we want to bring in calamus and absinthe too? I'm
We
just
can, but I want to first liberate protest and liberate the testes in the protest,
Okay.
because we can go to, like, we talk all the time about people thinking with their genitalia, and that's not actually what we, and what if people were actually thinking with their genitalia, they would be thinking in a connective way. They're actually thinking with is a fraction of their ego that they identify in that way. And so if you were actually grabbing the testes in affirmation, you would be rooting yourself in life, and you would be moving in the direction of the sacral king, or this who weds the land. And one of the interesting things about the laws around the sacral king, who did not make laws, whose two roles were to be the focus that gathered the people together for their assembly, and to be the focus who gathered the people, who rallied the people's spirit in times of trouble. And one of the responsibilities under the law of the sacred king was to be beautiful. Cultivating his own beauty was a responsibility of office, because that beauty was making oneself the most perfect offering to the spirit of the land one could be, and also inspiring others through beauty. And so we can compost all our cultural ideas of what we think beauty means, but if we take on that responsibility to be beautiful, to be rooted, and to be in love with the earth, and make ourselves the most beautiful offering to that beloved we can be, then we get to a much different place. And then our protest becomes something affirming rather than just a bunch of egoic grumbling.
No, that's beautiful. Right, pattern statement 6 on the pattern on the trestle board says, "In all things great and small, I see the beauty of the divine expression," which is a challenging thing. I mean, I say it in the woods, the whole pattern, and it's like, but it's like, but yeah, somewhere, the Gaza and horror, not, but somewhere to find the beauty. And then just the protest. Yes, that's a wonderful ode to balls. Thank you. That's a wonderful ode to balls. And yet still, protest means, again, to grab your balls, and I love your invoking, and to affirm, right? So at first it was to protest against the war, right? And then the against got dropped. To protest the war meant to take the to kidnap all that you said in affirmation of the war. And then just my quip is it's why women can't testify, because it comes from testes. We can ovify, and just want to bestow a cloak of ovifying on Claudia Sheinbaum. And I like that we've invoked Rosa Luxemburg, who I must find, I must make friends with her more. Thank you. Thank you, Sean. And Emma Goldman, and yeah, all these powerful socialist women to back her up, and that's part of the, and here comes this solstice, which is close to her birthday, incarnational time of Big Mama. And we go, oh, that's really super wonderful and great. And then our libation, I think there was some mention backstage of calamus and absinthe.
Yes. Oh, and that brings in two wonderful possibilities. I mean, so many wonderful possibilities.
All
But
right.
here, present with us, we have calamus. And calamus is growing out behind my yurt, but this particular beautiful root was grown by Nature Spirit Herbs in Williams, Oregon. And so calamus grows in mucky places. The root is sweet and fiery, and then the great reedy leaves that grow up from it were actually the leaves of grass that Walt Whitman referenced, because Whitman was in love with this plant. One of the and So calamus is, in Sanskrit they call it vaka. And in the Vedas, speak of it as the herb that scrapes clear the subtle channels of the mind. And in Chinese medicine, they speak of it as clearing that which mists over the orifices of the heart, so that the heart can see clearly, and then that bright yang of expression can come forward. And in North American Native communities, this is an important plant in rituals for Native singing all night. And so the singers will put a little calamus under their tongue for a few hours before they sing. And when you put it out, and when you first take it in, there's a fieriness and a bitterness to it. When you let it sit under your tongue for a while, the sweetness comes forward. And then it begins to salivate. You begin to salivate, and that begins to to lubricate your throat and open your throat to prepare you for singing. And at the same time, it's activating the part of your brain that is connected with speech. I've worked with it over and over again in moments when people lose the ability to speak, to reclaim that ability to speak. That ability to speak from the heart, and that ability to sing from the heart in such a profoundly beautiful medicine. And I've also recently begun the practice of falling asleep with a small piece of calamus root under my tongue, because that way I will wake up with my breath sweetened. It also it reminds my tongue to stay on the roof of my mouth so that I'll breathe through my nose throughout the night. And so it brings us to that proper breathing, that proper expression, that proper openness. And yeah, I think always about Maggie Kuhn with the Grey Panthers and her motto of speak the truth even when your voice shakes. And I feel like that's the motto of Calamus as well.
Right. And then it's I like reframing speak truth be power, because speak truth to power is still that outsource that speak, you know. And in the golden days of Bioneers, when our friend Micah had the alchemy booth, and people would go there, and she would just dose them with these fabulous tinctures that they'd made. And I would often go, going, I have a big talk, I'm not sure I'm prepared, when calamus. And she said Gandhi took it too, you know.
Oh,
I,
yeah.
In just the way that you say. So let's infuse all of us. And it's like, when I must go find the root and the tincture and the thing. But even just the word, we're bringing it into our council that people have calamus, calamus. Yes, exactly. That's right. Yeah. Yes. Wonderful. Are you chewing calamus, Rebecca Lowe? I see you dancing with it. It's wonderful. Yeah, so calamus root, and then Eddie, you were saying that it was put in absinthe as one of the fun things.
Yeah, along with wormwood, it was one of the not too well-known ingredients of absinthe and that milieu of literature that came about. But you both said the word root, which is incorrect in a certain botanical sense, in that it's a rhizome, not a root. And of course, the beauty of rhizomes, I actually identify as a rhizome, is that no matter it contains itself within every bit of it. So you can cut it and chop it and throw it around and you're just spreading it, right? It's the opposite of the arborescent form, the tree, the single stalk with roots that if you cut it off, well, it may resprout, but so I love the power of the rhizome, especially with thought and when you apply it to magic and the little bits of magical intention we put out there, how they don't just die or stay, they actually grow, but you have to kind of cut them and throw them before that happens. Also brings up my one of my favorite humans, Thomas Merton, who is often forgotten in that the 60s milieu. I said that word twice. But was such an important character in kind of not just Catholicism, that was kind of his cover, story. But I think he was really an agent of exploding spirituality through poetry, which was needed at that point desperately. Of course, you had the Beats and the hippies and everything, but Merton was his own kind of contemplative monastic version of that 60s energy, and he lived it so well, in my opinion. I recently listened to a series of lectures that I found on CD of him talking to the young monks at Gethsemane, the monastery where he lived and taught, and he was the whole series was about Sufism, so he was explaining to these young Catholic monks about the beauty of Sufism and the subtleties of it. And of course, my favorite thing about Merton is how he died. He was in India speaking at the World Ecumenical Conference, and he had just given his landmark speech entitled Marxism and Monasticism to this group of religious leaders from around the world, and he promptly goes back to his little room and is electrocuted in the shower, supposedly. But he had just met with the Dalai Lama for like 3 days and traversed all of Asia, looking at all the Buddhist, and his Asian journals are like, it's kind of like Kerouac's Some of the Dharma. We don't realize how much these folks knew before the Suzukis of the world and before the Trungpas and all these people who spread the Dharma. People like Kerouac were in the, another great Massachusetts character, were in the libraries of New York City studying the French translations of some of these Dharmic materials because they hadn't been translated into English yet. And I think when you read like some of the Dharma, he was doing the same thing. He was trying to regurgitate this deep spirituality through poetry, like Merton was doing.
That's so
And
great. Oh, sorry.
finally, it just brings up you talked about the Kogi last time, and when we were with the Kogi, of course, their spiritual gang is called the Mamos. They're sort of the shaman characters. And to be a Mamo, you have to go through 9 years in a cave. So they take kids when they're like 9 years old, and they spend 9 years alone, not alone, but in a cave, mostly alone. They have their food brought to them and stuff. And then when you're 18, you kind of have the choice. Like when you're Amish, it's like you're Rumspringer. Do you go out into the world or do you go back into the cave for another 9 years so that you can finally be a Mamo? That's who I'd like to invoke in our little backstage pantheon.
That's great. With a toast of some great absinthe and wormwood and calamus, and that we all be like rhizomes. We all be like rhizomes. It's so very now. That's super darling and invoking in, yes, wormwood, absinthe.
And as we're bringing in hidden Dharma, let's bring in the women who were the origins of Tantra before it became all kinds of other
Oh
things.
yes, Passionate Enlightenment, Brihaspati
Passionate
Shah.
Enlightenment, Miranda Shaw, gorgeous, gorgeous book. And
Yes.
speaking about those women who are the origins of Tantra and Tantra as this movement of finding enlightenment through passionate engagement with everything deeply with great vitality, and the keys as the women with the feminine knife, which is not the knife as a weapon, but the knife that cut that's the knife of liberation that cuts away whatever is binding you from your true compassionate self.
That's so
Cutting
great.
through the ignorance. Yeah, Yeshe Togyal was the real intense sort of primal female Tibetan character in this whole thing. Once again, very much forgotten even within the Tibetan Buddhists, but there's a whole biography written about her that you can find from the 70s
A whole biography of Miranda, or wait,
of
of
Yeshe Togyal. Yeah.
That's great. No, it's very Gemini. Everything that you're both saying is like, ooh. And did Merton, I remember vividly that he stepped into a shower and was electrocuted in India. What city was he in?
Ah, I don't know if it was Mumbai or a smaller t I'm not sure.
Okay, we have to check because I thought it was Varanasi, and when I was in Varanasi, I was thinking of him because we had a shower very much like that, right? With a bit of a live wire kind of, I was like, oh, Thomas Merton. And you do animate, he'd been with the Dalai Lama and Marxism and monasticism, and then out, which those portals are open in India all the time. You can just step through. And it might have been Varanasi, not sure. I mean, we'll check on that. And then so felt kinned. And then Miranda Shaw, yes. Thank you. This is so wonderful to have everybody. Well, and we see her. I don't know if she's still breathing,
I think
Miranda
she
Shaw.
is. I
Oh,
was
good.
watching videos of her where she looked pretty vital, and they were not too long ago.
Right. Well, I met her a long time ago when the book came out, and I hoovered a bunch of it into my book at the time. And it's super pertinent to us now. because she was a Sanskrit scholar and she discovered that the feminine endings on the names of all the great tantric teachers had been erased, right? And she's like, wait a minute, wait a minute. And so she dives deep, right, to find the wrathful Dakinis that pre-exist Tibetan Buddhism. Tibetan Buddhism inhales them and makes them kind of ornamental and pretty, a little bit of a taming, but in their original depiction, they were part woman, part animal. And she says the wrathful Dakinis dance and laugh as they feast on the painful negativity that the unenlightened would think of as a problem. So as just part of our repertoire to laugh and dance as they feast on the painful negativity, is and other great things. But that's great. And I have that book and it's all humming. So who brought what? That's great. We have a great party here. We have Rhizomes and Rosa Luxemburg and Emma Goldman and Claudia Scheinbaum, the Wrathful Dakinis and Miranda Shaw. Yeah, and that idea of uncovering things. So I did post in our Facebook when I was kind of like, oh, and then I found Omar Sosa, oh, how wonderful. And then, scrolling late at night, sometimes it's useful. And I was watching an Al Jazeera show from 9 years ago that I posted in our Facebook thing, the whole episode. And at first I ran into clips, but it's about it's June 8th, 1967, and it's about the Israeli army attacking the U.S. Liberty American ship, an ally that was there gathering intelligence. And Israel didn't want even the U.S. to have intelligence because they'd said, oh, it's just a small war, nothing really. But we're going to seize the Golan Heights and the West Bank, but we don't want anybody to know. So they bombed this ship, the U.S. Liberty, and they torpedoed it. And when sailors got in lifeboats, they machine gunned the lifeboats. I mean, it was just war crimes. And they jammed the communications so that the U.S. Liberty, they were all kind of having a great time. They said it was a great ship. We all loved each other. What a great gig. We were sunbathing. And then, whoa. And they jammed, the Israeli government jammed the communications so they couldn't call for help. Right. So again, war crime, war crime, war crime. And then Lyndon Johnson is briefed on this and he's going, that's horrible, this story. And he leaks to Newsweek the story, the true story of what happened. That's right. Oh, thank you, Laura Morrison. Thomas Merton died in Muing Samkhun Prakan, Thailand. Oh, not in India. All right. Well, it's still same India bathroom plumbing. And then because it was then leaked that Lyndon Johnson, okay, we're 1967, Vietnam War, America. It's leaked that Lyndon Johnson was the leaker to Newsweek, and Israel says, if you tell this story, we will finish your career. They blackmailed him. But we will call it blood libel and that you're an anti-Semite and you will never be in politics again, Lyndon Johnson. So he's like, And so they squished the story. And there were these people who died. I mean, a third of the crew were either killed or injured, right? And they're in this report going, and it was suppressed. And Israel said to Lyndon Johnson, we'll give you some prizes for lying. At the time, see that again, the Jewish progressives groups were very anti-Vietnam, and Israel said, we'll calm them down. And we'll, what was the other thing? I can't remember. Anyway, it's in the report, whatever. And it's like, woo. And then at minute 30 of this thing, I see my late brother-in-law, Thomas Hughes, right, who was an important State Department kind of grown-up guy. And I just went with my sister who grieves him still. And it's like, and there's Tom Hughes, right, in this incredible story, the dead reporting in, the dead are speaking. And what I'd wanted to say at his memorial is, we can't live through the dead, but we can invite the dead to live through us. And he was, a Carnegie Endowment for Peace, State Department guy, liberal. And he kept saying, what does it mean, neoliberal? And I'm like, I can't really explain it to you, because he's like, well, but an important person in his own way, but it was great to have him, the debtor, speaking. And when I ran across this incredible report, because it's so resonant with now, and Israel said it was a tragic mistake. They have the recording of the strafing helicopters going, that's a US ship, right? Yep, yeah, okay, let's destroy it. And they kept coming back again and again to try and sink it. And then they hauled it to a port, well, remember whatever, and they did a plaster job, so when it sailed back to New York, it looked like nothing had happened, and the US Liberty was sold for scrap for $100,000. Anyway, it's an incredible story, right? Oh, it was a terrible mistake. We'll investigate. And it also mentions that at that time, 1967, the Israeli lobby controlled 165 of the electoral votes needed of the 270 to be president. That was in 1967. So it's like, and it's like, thank you, Thomas Hughes, and all those people, to bring this story so resonant with now up. And I just wanted to put that on the table too, for us all to consider and wonder, this tippy moment. And that brings us to the proposed peace deal, right? All right, team, this is where we welcome, against all odds, headlines. I did pose a clip, encourage listening to Daniel Levy, former Israeli peace negotiator, on the proposed peace deal. Very lucid, interesting guy, going, and again, it's like, again, once again, the Israelis are like, no, or no, it's like. But anybody want to write a headline? You had something, Sean, to say about how it could go.
Yes, it was, I think I've spoken before about the pragmatism of old generals and the fact that they may not be making decisions for moral reasons all the time, but they are strategic thinkers. And I think about Yoav Gallant, the defense minister, who has already begun voicing some of his disapproval of Netanyahu. And has already begun to say, okay, we need a realistic endgame here. And he is very, very close to breaking from Netanyahu. And he has not yet been indicted by the ICC. So he still has his own interests to save. And so I'm envisioning Yoav Gallant and some of the other members of the war cabinet who don't want to go down with the ship and who have strategic thinking to see that this is just bad from a military perspective, saying, take this peace deal or your government is done. And either way, then we either get Netanyahu taking the peace deal or we get Netanyahu's government falling. As prominent ministers of the war cabinet depart. And I don't think I think that it with the fall of Netanyahu, I don't think that the policy could continue in the way that it has. And then I'm remembering in Oaxaca in that June of the uprising, on through the December of the occupation. When the people were outside the governor's palace, they were not demanding his resignation. They were chanting, Yakayo, Yakayo, he has fallen, he has fallen. And so let's imagine all the voices of the veterans and the mothers of the soldiers. And the families of the hostages, and those who truly envision peace, and those who are just tired of the war, surrounding the war cabinet and chanting Yakayo, whatever the Hebrew equivalent is, chanting the fall that is already in progress. And the generals having the strategic wisdom to not want to go down with the madman in
That's
charge.
so that's and then we can condense that into a headline, right?
Oh, yes.
The dream, we'll take all of that into but Yakayo, and he has already fallen. It's like the Qigong. I think it's a real video, but the principle is what you're invoking, and it's a split screen of Chinese monks chanting, "It has already happened, it has already happened," and the other half of the screen is somebody's tumor, right? It has already happened, it has already happened, and you can see the tumor shrinking, right? So if it's not true, it should be, anyway, that was the video, but it's the principle that you're invoking, calling in for us, which is it has already happened. So yeah, it's Yakayo.
Yes.
It's and that could be turned into a Western song. Hippie-i-yay, yippee-i-yay,
Right.
yakayo. He has fallen. He has fallen, and then sanity emerging, and that brings us to, our complex metaphysical conversation. There's nobody grumpy here, which is great, right? Nobody I need to cr cringe in front of if I suggest that, that we want to back Biden up on this, right? And people are like, "Oh, the withering progressive." It's like, no, if you do this, then we will back you. And I've been signing, different things, where you sign your encouragement for this thing, and a lot of it's the Arab Defense League, and I do always rework the language when you send it, sign the petition, and going, if you do this, we will back you up. It's only fair enough, in the sense of backstage backing and going, all right, to Neptune, the dreams, that we're all befoiled, but in whatever way. And then that, as I mentioned in the missive, many things, but I was feeling, again, Saturn, Jupiter going, bleakness, oh no, connections, bleakness, connections. And last night, after watching several redemptive episodes of Law and Order, in which they really get sociopaths right, but I was like, oh, I can't sleep. And then it's like, have you done the practice, Caroline, that you want everybody, have you tonight envisioned Leonard Peltier emerging into sunlight? And it's like, oh, I didn't do that, right? Yet. And have you done what you've been encouraging everybody to do, which is our dedicated, crafted intention, that we want to be an agent for what in the world, a voice for what in the world? And I go, no, I haven't done that. Let me do that. And the practices, Saturn says, it's our craft in this wild sea. And it's like, right. So I did that. I envisioned again Leonard emerging into the welcoming embrace of the sun and the wind and the those who love him. And I did what we're practicing, which is to move that image to the back of our head, occipital, where it enters into the world, magnetizing metaphor into matter right there. And I go, oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot to do it, and I feel much better doing it. Certainly doing what I've told everybody to do. It's like, that's always a good idea. And then followed up by, each one of our own, dedication, and to see that. And it's like, right, these practices, micro as they may be, but adding to them really do give us, stability. I go, ah. And so there's one more, Omar Sosa. Because the when I heard and connected with him, it's like, oh, Legba really is Mercury, although not exactly. And the Orishas in Santeria, I know to be real. I mean, I know to be real. And it's why I like tossing the word archetype into the composting cauldron. It's an old word, but Jung really used it to smuggle radical information into academia. Nothing to worry about. It's just an archetype, as opposed to an orisha, a living intelligence, not cozy, very real, like woo. And Legba is that. And Legba, the guardian of the crossroads, and I love this book, Flash, whoop, Flash of the Spirit. I love this book, by Robert Ferris Thompson. So wonderful. And always this part of Legba, the guardian of the crossroads. We're at a crossroads, personal and collective. And he says, and Legba bestows the magic word ashe, which means may the words incarnate into actuality. Ashe. And he says, ashe is an honor of righteous living, not a right. And it can be seriously diminished when someone has slighted a deity or an important person, right? Santeria, very big on manners, very big on manners. This means that one must cultivate the art of recognizing significant communication, right? The chants that we want, Yakayo, and also from Terry Pratchett, Yon Tan Tethra, which dissipates delusional glamour. Anyway, so one must cultivate the art of recognizing significant communication, knowing what is truth and what is falsehood, or else the lessons of the crossroads, the point where doors open or close, where persons have to make decisions that may forever after affect their lives, will be lost. Or not, right? I just add on there too, but it's so here we have Omar Sosa invoking Legba, the guardian of the crossroads, and we call him in, we invoke him with such a master, such a joyful master as Omar Sosa, because then we call him in and he opens the path for all that's being spoken in each person's mind here and each person voicing out loud. So here's Omar Sosa and one of his great versions of Legba.
Thank you.
Remembering to toss flowers into water. That was so beautiful. I spent time in Cuba twice a year. The Folklore Institute in Havana opens its doors to the rhythmically challenged from all over the world to teach Santeria drumming and chanting. And my sister hooked us up, and we went, and like those women dancing, that Santeria, and I but I love that video for so many reasons, because there's the nature and the throwing the flowers into the water, which I think has real effect, you know, just and then the electronics, you know, the board people. And so it's a great example of what we're assigned to work together now, the Gemini Pisces conversation. So the electronics and the media into the divine water, flowers, magic, working with each other rather than contrast. So I love that. And I loved, you know, I put in my little missive that it was, you know, all the little micro mundane of, so I was driving to my hearing checkup, and I love the metaphysics of the mundane, that the audiologist some ways back, I said, you know, even with the hearing aids, which I prefer to call wolf ears, I said, I still say what? And she goes, yes, you want to speak aloud to yourself or read to yourself, because you're actually hearing everything, but you want to create the new neurological pathways to, how did she put it? Your brain has decided that there's certain things you can't hear, even though you can hear them now. And I go, oh, that's so great. It's a metaphor for like everything, right? So we want to grow our,
And Calamus helps with that too.
Oh, cool. And the psilocybe mushrooms and everything's, and the rhizomes, everything, you know, to grow, you know, it's all, you know, connected in that way. So, but on my way there, you know, by the side of the road, there was a dead little fox cub, and it was so moving, and it was Parkway, so it's like, oh. And I have a friend on Facebook who always finds animals killed, and makes beautiful homage to them, right? And so on the way back, I picked up my dogs, and I go, dogs, we're going on a holy duty. We're going to find that little fox. And we have quite a lot of foxes, and so I didn't know if it was the one that we greeted every night, or that had come to my car door as a little puppy and a tiny cub, and was like, I didn't know which, but it was like, oh. And so we picked it up off the road, because I think that's important, and put flowers around little fox. And my sister had given me a necklace that was good, but it didn't speak to me. And I go, there's the necklace. And then the throwing of the flowers into the water, it's like it's like also homage, you know, throwing that in felt, you know, connected. Oh, thank you. And Dina says Legba's beat is 1, 2, 3, like the sound he made as he walked with a wooden leg. Thank you. That's great. We have a lot of knowledge here, which is wonderful. Who brought what? And you know, and seeing the little fox, you know, it was like all the different sorrows of the world kind of condensed, like, oh, we're so sorry. And then, you know, the fox is so important in the I Ching, hexagram 64. The task is great. It is nothing less than leading the world from chaos back to order. But if the little fox gets its tail wet, then all is lost, right? That's the mysterious final hexagram of the I Ching. And the Confucian scholars say the skillfulness of the older fox is legendary in China, right? The heedless fox, you know, gets its tail wet, which is probably really serious where it's cold in north. But the legendary caution of the older fox as it listens to the ice, is what will save the world, right? And so we have rhizomes, and maybe I'll be like rhizomes, maybe I'll be like the fox that listens and is strategically brilliant.
And the 2 times I've done death rites for foxes, I've learned that foxes give gratitude and honor to those who honor their fallen kin. Because the 2 times I've done death rites for foxes, very shortly afterward, other foxes have come to visit me, as though to say, "We understand what you did for the one we loved, and thank you." And that gratitude, which is the original story of the Grateful Dead, the dead who are helped along the road, who then come and bring blessing later.
Crows are very big that way too. Yvette Buygens is the crow lady in the East Bay, who's just very fabulously trippy. And I met her and hosted her because I read about her that a family had had they and their dog were just being bombarded by crows who were like, ah, and they didn't know why. And Yvette Buygens came and she goes, when she talks to crows, she puts on a crow head. And dresses in black and comes in and listens to their story, and then sees like, oh, there's a little crow baby that had fallen and the dog had mangled it, and so she's clearly to the crows gathered. She goes, oh, we see. Oh, and here's this little baby. It's going to die, but we're going to honor it here, and she explained it to the family, right? And we're honoring your beloved little crow baby, and we're very sorry, and we won't do that again. And it resolved the whole thing. Yeah, and like what you said, I mean, foxes are very trippy, right? So we honored the little very young fox cub, and then we went for our walk by the river, and another fox. They're all looking pretty thin, I must say. But another fox came right, 20 feet in front of us on the path and just stood there. And we're approached by foxes quite a lot. At night we have appointments, and they clearly want to engage and play. But it's like, I don't think you're rabid, right? But well, we'll just I don't know, can't tell. But they're very interested in conversing and playing. They're very playful creatures, and they have a great laugh. So yeah, honoring the dead of the crows and the foxes and all beings that seemed important. Oh, thank you. And Sean's posted. Yes, Ruth says, thank you for taking care of the fox. Yeah, very sad. And Sean posts a bit of fox memorial writing. Yes. Oh, and Laura says, perfumed forest wet with rain, Abdullah Ibrahim companion piece. Yes, all praise to Abdullah Ibrahim, a great friend of our friend Deborah Falmouth. I can't remember how old he is, but he's still on world tour. He's in his late 80s, maybe 88. Last time he was here at the Kennedy Center. And anyway, so yes, all praise to these powerful magic musicians. I mean, who are calling it in, who are part of a lineage and a tradition. We go, ooh, we so want that. So there. Any other piece headlines that, oh, Rebecca wanted to say?
Well, I just thought that the piece missing is to send Netanyahu the dream that I've been playing with, and what I was doing earlier when Sean mentioned calamus was to invoke it, right? To speak it aloud, and it comes, right? So, like after last Monday night, I thought, ooh, Asclepian, it's time to remember to remember that. And that's, I had animal dreaming that just tonight. I sent you a tiger dream, but I went, oh, I had a snake dream and I had kittens and so it's maybe hanging with you for 20 years, but to go, I know this, right? It's part of my being. I just need to speak it aloud. Right. So calamus is the first word now I know. And I'm like to speak aloud to start that process. So thank you, Sean, because even tonight, just going, oh, I need to remind Caroline, we need to send him the dream.
Yeah.
With that term, which I wanted to ask Sean one more time, that he's stepped down, that word. I wanted to write it out phonetically for myself.
Which word is that? Which word?
Yakayo, I think.
Yakayo, yeah, was it. Yakayo, thank you.
Kayo. And it means it has already happened, or he's already stepping down,
he has fallen.
Oh, he has fallen into the underworld with a plate of mushrooms. Right. So, or to learn knitting and weaving, or right. Well, you know, will Netanyahu be happy to receive that dream that he's already fallen? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Is that what you mean, Rebecca?
Well, in that same version of, you know, if I am abusing power, you know, may I be chilled out? You know, I see him falling back into bed, right? Falling into sleep, right? That it, instead of he has fallen like, oh, it's like, oh, maybe I need to step down and go back to bed and have more dreams, right? It's his dreaming time. It's his preparation, as we were talking about. I was talking to Patricia about, oh, what's his name? Great Indian popular author who Marianne Williamson was trying to ask him to support her. And he said, Marianne, I'm preparing for my death. You know, it's a far off time, but he's spending the time, right, to prepare for this great transition. He didn't need to be involved in contemporary politics anymore. And so that's, I think for Netanyahu, it's like, it's time for you to, you know, take some time to dream, to prepare for your next, you know, your next transition, you know, outside of this political realm, right? So that's, he's fallen out of the politics into his own private journey rather than this public one, maybe.
No, that's great. Ooh. That's great. And again, right. And did you say falling? Because yeah, all the things that we're all working on. So it's like, so Omar Sosa reminds me of the whole Santeria Legba going, oh, yes, yes, yes. And this fantastic book by Mitsuji Satome, because I'm revitalizing Aikido and preparing a friend's giving away many things, and I go, do you have mats for falling? Because I've forgotten how to fall, right? And nervous about Aikido going, oh, dear. And so he said, yeah, I'll bring you over some mats for falling. And I'm right at the part of, you know, rereading Aikido and the Harmony of Nature, in which Satomi says, almost every day I receive ukemi, the techniques of falling, the act of receiving the force and saving yourself from injury. O sensei, and through these experiences, I slowly began to grasp the connection of the movements of Aikido with the movements of the universe, right? So falling intentionally, it's like the art of grieving, you know, grief artfully expressed becomes a sacrament of kinship. And then if you're, well, it's the famous Joseph Campbell thing, if you find that you're falling, dive, right? And he actually got that from Jung, and who actually got that from famous Irish James Joyce. Okay, so James Joyce had a daughter who many thought was schizophrenic, and he took her to all the great healers, and they were like, oh, and he took her to Jung, and Jung said, let me talk to her, and then came out and said, because Joyce was like, she's not crazy, she's a genius like me. And Jung said, no, she's really bleeping nuts. The difference is, she's falling, you're diving. And it's our Saturn practice again. If you find that you're, and that's where Campbell then took it, if you find that you're falling, dive, point your toes. And that's part of our Saturn Jupiter quintile, which is, you know, the difference between falling and diving, just adding some intention to it. And so I'm just rolling around a little bit on the mats going, intending to fall prevents falling, right? You know, and it's like, oh, and my friend was useful too. He's like, well, don't try the somersault forward, just backwards first because I've gotten so I'm ready to return from stiff and lazy, right? Like, no, we want supple, right? So just having the mats, which a friend dropped off, which was very kind, right at the time I'm reading about the page unfurling. And then just what he says is, the connection of the movements of Akita with the movements of the universe, right? Falling and spiraling. And so that might even make the invitation to Netanyahu going, here you go. Here you go. Let go.
And he can
Yeah.
fall
And
into
he's,
water, not
yeah.
necessarily hard on earth, right?
Yeah.
He can
Right.
fall into the dream.
Well, and he's been expending so much energy trying to brace himself against the fall. So many are expending so much energy trying to brace themselves against the fall. And I think about like the tarot card in the tower, the tower card in the tarot, and people are so afraid of the tower card because of the lightning strike and the fire and the tumbling. But they forget the tower was built on a foundation of sand. It was always going to fall. So now that it's happened, now you don't have to keep expending all your energy staving off the disaster. You instead can say, okay, that's all done. Let's build again, but let's build on a firm foundation.
Excellent. Right, so it is such a tippy moment. We invoke Terry Pratchett, who said magic is easy. You just find the tipping point, push, right? Or in Aikido, you would go, you'd blow and pull. You'd go this way. There you go into the spiraling fall. Learning how to fall intentionally and backwards somersault and those things. But yeah, no, that's great. So excellent. Anybody want to report in or say anything or have a headline? Oh, good. Aaron says, I think about how we're seeing Leonard Peltier released in compassion to spend time with his family, his grandchildren. Can we see Netanyahu also released in compassion? Big call, big call. I love you, Aaron. To spend time with his family, his grandchildren, have an awakening of compassion for all. It's like, all right, why not? Right, because the vengeance, sociopathy runs on vengeance. In micro families or larger things, the cunning man finds purchase and all his hearts are full of grievance. So yeah, dissolving, right? Neptune says, solve coagula. Dissolve and reimagine and beware the impulse to punish. So that's great. Did you want to say, Rebecca?
No, just heart opening. It's just as I go back through my notes, Akita, like you go Akito, for me it's theater, and what is it but vocalization and gesture, right? It's the gesture will help invite in the imagery.
Right. Yona says, what is the root of cunning? We'll get right back to you on that. I well, why not? Here, you all chat gaily while I look up the root of cunning just because it's a good. Oh, no, I can't do that.
And I wonder if it's related to kenning in its root.
Or Ken, it's oh wait okay, just keep chatting merrily
Okay.
along yourselves.
In mine, my little app, it says early 14th century, learned, skillful, present participle of kunnen, to know. So yeah, kenning,
Ah, I
sense of
can.
skillful deceit, probably from the 1300s. That's all I've got. Doesn't
Right.
even give me English or whatever, but to know.
That's right. So yeah, it's I can or and then also I just love the British thing to suss something too, which is that's a whole different avenue. All right, but the root of cunning, that's a good thing, right? And to restore to its original meaning, right? Because cunning is almost always like conniving, and it needn't be. It could be liberated. And foxes are cunning. Yeah, we want to liberate that word. Oh, and then chat merrily among yourselves. I just remembered something important that wants to come before our council. I'll be right back. Just continue, carry on, Eddie
Well,
and John and everybody. I'll be right back.
in our etymological realm, I've been thinking interestingly about the difference between truth and fact, and the cunningly brilliant radical journalist of the late 60s, Roy Mungo, said truth is more important than fact. And I got very curious about the distinction. And when we go to the etymology of truth, it is related to words like troth and truce, and it's about that coming together, that shared knowing, that shared understanding. But fact is related to words like factory and facsimile. A fact is something that is made. And so when we fossilize truth into fact, then it becomes this made solid thing. But when we let go of fact and go into truth, then we can come into, okay, what's our agreement? What are we coming together around? What is the reality that we are sharing? And it becomes more fluid and more subject to and more democratic.
That's great. I will have to listen to the recording of this. It's very rich. It's very rich. But I just remembered somebody whom I have not honored, right? Which is Legba. This my
Oh,
fairy godmother
Janet.
bestowed this on me years ago, and I had to haul him out
Oh,
from hiding. I had to haul him out from hiding. This was carved for Eric Fromm's wife in Cuba a long time ago. And I had a real fairy godmother, Paula Lawrence, who was singing Cole Porter in Carnegie Hall at the age of 94. And she gave this to me, and I forgot about him until now, until tonight, right? And I'm going, oh my goodness, and he doesn't like being forgotten. And I go, no wonder, no wonder I've been gloomy. That's right, there we go. And he was like, haul me out from my hiding place. He lost his feet. He lost his feet. Maybe Rebecca can help with that because she's a Pisces. We imagine him having his feet back. And he's a quirky being, the arms and all, but he's got he's I'm I hello. All right. We will honor you. But anyway, but thank you, thank you. He wanted to come say receive hellos, I think. Right, open the path, open the headlines, open the thing that things may be falling and falling into place, and against all odds, that's great. Yes, his feet are in another realm, said Aaron. That's completely true. All right, thank you. I will take care of you. I will take you upstairs. Right. He was in his dark, hidden little place for a while. I don't know how long. Too long. He said too long. All right, there we go. He's back now. But everything real, everything symbolic. We love that. So excellent. Well, if anybody wants to say anything, that's great. May we be as rhizomes. May we drink our absinthe and calamus. Yes, must find calamus root. Must find calamus root. It's like yes, and Alegba goes. Yes, all the things you've forgotten that you have or that are helpful that will support us now. Really great idea, great idea. So yes, so feel free to speak now, and we have a wonderful closing Phoenix, Damien Escobar, just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing to ride out on. Yes, hello, Papa Legba, and all the chats to Legba. Yeah.
I have a quick question for you. Oh, don't let me forget it, but just shit. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Just
Sorry.
keep.
It's
No,
coming to
we're all free associating. It's like a game of charades. Was like what? How many syllables? No, come back, Yona. Sounded like something.
Yeah, something important. We were just
Yeah.
talking about it. I can't remember. God.
Absinthe, calamus, speaking, what we'd
Oh,
forgotten.
I was just looking up calamus, and they were saying there's some kind of toxic component in it, which is why they don't recommend using it in the United States. And I was wondering what that component is.
Well, that is that information is put out there widely, and I'm highly skeptical of it myself. So that constituent is called beta-acerone, and beta-acerone is a constituent that really opens up vision, opens up clarity. It's also present in wild ginger. And the reason why they say it's toxic is they injected large amounts of fractionated beta-acerone into rats for in cages for extended periods of time, and their livers were unhealthy. But so I always say to people when I'm offering them calamus, like I'll share that information with them, but depending on the audience, I will tend to put it in: raise your hand if you are a rat, raise your hand if you're living in a cage. And then, okay, if you see me, get out a still and make the essential oil of this. And then you see me go into a laboratory and fractionate the beta-acerone. And then you see me coming with a syringe. Then don't let me inject this into you every day for 40 days.
Real good point, Sean. Thank you.
Right. And then also just, our wariness, so that's a great thing to bring up, Yona, of the reality police going, because Calamus also is about speaking the truth, right? It's like, no, can't have that. That's toxic. That's dangerous. Or vision, what you were mentioning, Sean. It's like, no, let's prove that it's harmful, right? The reality police going, no, stepping out of lines. But we're all, cross-pollinating heretics here, going, yes, exactly. That's wonderful. Wonderful. Elena says in Latin America we have Heliopsis long pi long long, long I apologize long long longipes, and in known as chicagwe, the root is chewed to numb the tongue and relieve pain in the teeth and throat. Yes, roots, rhizomes, good. And Aaron says yes, studies based on single constituents with animal trials often have very different results than whole plant medicine. Right, that's the whole thing. Andy Weil getting paid to go around the world taking drugs in early 1970s, and found, with he said there are no drug-free cultures, but there are cultures with no problems. And the two things is that the medicine plants, always used in ritual, even caffeine, here's your first caffeine drink when you're 12 and only in the morning. There you go, and with a ceremony to honor the intelligence of the plant. And coca and cocaine is a great example. Coca leaves essential for living in high altitudes. Cocaine. So his crafting and then our conversing about it is, when you take anything and refine it, you take and refine it into a little white powder, you're taking it out of its community. So it will take you out of community, right? So yeah, sugar, heroin, flower, whatever the thing is, but the same, yeah, the principle that you're saying to take, and what Aaron's bringing up too, to take one thing, it's like, oh, humans, it's the when it's a community, right? Again, humans' desire to extract from community, it's like, no, it all works together, yeah, so that's great. So no, thank you for retrieving your question, Yana. It's an important one. We have patience. We have time. It's like the one witty thing that the ISIS team used to say in Iraq is to the U.S. military, "You have the watches, we have the time." Anyway,
That's funny.
so we have the time. The yes. So we do have the time, and a good time is being had, I think. All right, before we waft off, any summation, any headline, any blessing? We remember, I remembered last night, and I've been doing it every night since I encouraged us to do that, which is to see Leonard emerging, right? And then add anything that we've envisioned here to one's dedicated practice, and then each for oneself to see one's dedication realized and move it out through the occipital into the world. That's really good. Yes, Aaron says.
I would really like to see, I know this is going to sound bad, but Judge Merchan, he's been making really great decisions, but keeping the strength, because look at what this person is doing. Like, he just needs so much help right now to stand up against all these crazy mobby people.
Yes. That's really important. We pull in our Saturn, our pewter shields of protection. Yeah, Judge Marchand is a great upholder of democracy under death threat, and his daughter and Stormy Daniels.
Yes.
I mean, Stormy Daniels and her daughter have been under death threat the whole get-go. And so when people were going, oh, she's not a prostitute, she's a fantastic actress, I happen to know some things about her, I've always really loved her. She's born on St. Patrick's Day, right? And
Wow.
there's the apocryphal story of St. Patrick's Day is when you metabolize poison, that St. Patrick's given a cup of poisoned wine, the apocryphal story, which I love so much, and at a party, and he holds the poisoned wine up to the light, the poison rises to the top like froth on a Guinness, and he quaffs, he blows it off, and quaffs the drink and toasts everyone, including those who tried to poison him, causing the elders to go, a real initiate. And may we all do that. May we all, because it's such a trickster thing. He's given a cup of poisoned wine, he doesn't drink it and die. He doesn't go, oh, I hate poisoned wine. No, he metabolizes it and turns it into a blessing for everyone. Right? That's really good. And Stormy Daniels, born on St. Patrick's Day, she carries that thing. She metabolizes poison, but she could use some backup, the death threats, and to her daughter. I mean, it's really creepy. And she's got $600,000 in legal fees, right? So it's like, so as I go went around the internet, when people go, oh, she's a prostitute, and I go, no, and she's done this, and she's born on St. Patrick's Day, and she's under death threat, and her daughter, and she's under $600,000 in legal fees, and she did this for principle, so show some fucking respect, right? I say to everybody, which I feel. So again, protecting, yes, Judge Marchand, very important. No, that's a beautiful thing, a beautiful, crucial thing. And the jurors, and the 12 jurors, right? The hate thing, protection. So I like the word I've invented, boomerang, spelled MERINGUE, which is that it all go back to its source with a pie in the face, with a lemon meringue pie in the face, right? May anything up to no good go back to its source with a pie in the face, right? So it's comedic. And everybody sees it going, well, what's that pie doing on your face? What bad juju have you been doing? Yeah. So anything, at anybody, again, we return to Claudia Sheinbaum, Neptune right on her moon, just like fabulous. Like she's part of the dream. And just like if people are doing good or we want them to do good, we back that up. I mean, I think that's part of our non churlishness, right, is part of the thing. We will back you up. If you do good, we will back you up. Or even if you don't, we'll back up the good part of you. We're working on that, right? Right? Like Lugba says, I'm so glad to be out of the cave. Right. So wonderful. All right, team. So this is great. So let's ride out with Damian Escobar and Phoenix. It's really great. Some of you have seen it before, but here it is. It's so completely wonderful. Here we go. Thank you, team. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. Much beauty. Thank you.